And hello, Sun Sounds listeners. This is Andy Bomick, which means once again it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour I'll be reading picture book. And then the second half hour, I'm going to continue with a novel that I've been reading now for maybe a little over 5 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. But first, let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled Amara and the Bats. And then it's The Secret Elephant, inspired by a true story of friendship. Gaga, Mistake Day. And we'll finish up the first half hour with some Shel Silverstein poems from his book, Everything on It. So, it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled Amara and the Bats. Amara really loves bats. When Amara was very small, a bat got trapped in the attic of her old house. Amara asked if she could hold the bat, but her mom and big brother, Samir, told her they should wait for the wildlife rescue team. They would know how to handle and look after the bat safely. When the wildlife rescue team arrived, they caught the bat carefully and held it very gently in a towel. Amara got to see the bat's fluffy face, beady eyes, and delicate wings up close. Some people are afraid of bats, but Amara thought they were so cute. Part of her wished she could keep it as a pet, but Amara knew the bat would be happier out in the wild, where it could fly around and be free. Ever since then, Amara has loved bats. Her favorite thing to do is collect all the bat facts she can find and write them in her notebook. Mom, did you know that bats are nocturnal? That means they're awake at night. They hang upside down like this. And they're the only mammals that can fly. Amara and her family were moving to a new town. She was supposed to be packing up her room, but she kept getting distracted by more bat facts. Amara squeaked all around the house. Samir, did you know that bats have such a high-pitched squeak that we can't even hear them? They use echolocation to find their food in the dark. I can hear you, Samara laughed. Amara and her family often watched the bats flying near their old house. She knew that all kinds of bats lived all over the world. So, no matter where they lived, she'd always be able to see them. After they moved, Amara couldn't wait to visit the park in her new neighborhood to see the bats flying around at sundown. Did you know that most bats eat insects or fruit, but some eat fish, frogs, and even flowers? They have really long tongues to reach the nectar. They are amazing pollinators. But when Amara and her family got to the park, there were no bats to be found. They asked the park ranger about the bats, but she hadn't seen any in a while. We used to have a few bats nearby years ago, the ranger said sadly, but it's just me working here now. And more of the land is being sold to make room for buildings. Amara felt a sad feeling in her tummy on the way home. She couldn't stop thinking about the bats and their habitat. There was so much that needed fixing. She felt as if the weight of the whole world was crushing down on her. What could she do to help? Amara, her mom knocked on the door gently. I unpacked the rest of your books, and your new Nature magazine arrived. Thanks, Mom, said Amara, still feeling glum. It will feel like home soon, I promise. Her mom placed the magazine and Amara's bad books on the bed and then gave her a hug. Amara opened her magazine and started to read. There was a story about young people organizing beach cleanups to clear plastic from the oceans. And another story about a boy teaching people to connect with nature by writing a blog and fighting to protect endangered birds. She found lots of stories and videos online about kids taking action to help animals and the planet. Soon, Amara realized if they could make a difference, so could she. And she had an idea. Amara showed her mom and Samir a picture of a bat house, a little wooden house built for bats to roost in. Maybe if we can help the park build some bat houses, the bats will come back. We have to try to save the park. She decided to talk about her ideas for show and tell the next day. She was still new at school, so she was a bit nervous to stand up in front of her class. But Amara didn't have to worry because her classmates really wanted to help. They started to tell her about their favorite animals. Jasper loved tigers, and Lucy loved pangolins. Their favorite animals were endangered, too. When Amara told Jasper and Lucy more about the bat houses, they had some great ideas. We could have a bake sale, said Jasper, and paint signs, Lucy waved her paintbrush. What if they could build a nature reserve in the park so that lots of wild animals would have a home in the city? Amara felt inspiration bubbling up inside her. She loved a challenge. The entire class painted signs and baked cakes to raise money for the nature reserve. Amara's new friends all wanted to help the bats come home. She was so happy. Amara's mom made some important phone calls, and soon their neighborhood gathered together to hold up their painted signs. Save the bats, nature reserve for our animals, clean air, love bats, save their homes, save our park. It was hard work, but eventually people listened. The park would get its nature reserve. Over the next few months, volunteers helped make a bat-friendly sanctuary, a wild place where nature could flourish in the park. They made a new pond and planted flowers that smelled nice at nighttime, so lots of insects could come by for the bats to eat. But houses need the perfect location with enough sunlight placed at least 12 feet high. Let the grass and local plants grow wild. Avoid using pesticides. Grow hedges to help bats navigate and give other animals a home. Many bats love eating insects, and ponds help attract lots of them. Pile up dead leaves or logs to attract insects and small mammals. Pale flowers attract night flying insects for bats to eat. The park ranger put the bat houses up in a special place with help from the wildlife rescue team. I hope they come back, Amara said thoughtfully, sipping her hot chocolate. We might have to wait a while, the ranger replied. It's okay, I can wait. Every month, Amara and her family would check to see if the bats had roosted. They waited and waited and waited, but the bats didn't come. Amara tried to stay brave. One day, when Amara was eating pancakes for dinner, her mom got a phone call. They needed to go to the park right away. When they arrived, the ranger waved them over. Amara was nervous. Had something happened to the bat houses? Suddenly, her mom and brother whispered, "Amara, look!" And there they were, flying above her. The bats had made a new home, and Amara felt at home too. It was the best feeling in the world. The Secret Elephant, inspired by a true story of friendship. Our story begins many years ago, back when I was a baby elephant. Screeching monkeys dangled in their trees. Roaring lions sunbathed on a dusty patch of dried grass, and sniffling meerkats patrolled their enclosure. There were no other elephants like me at the zoo, but I did have my keeper, and she was my family. We did everything together. We had lunch together, we washed together, and we even did chores together. I was a very helpful young elephant. But then everything changed. People stopped visiting the zoo, and my keeper told me about a great war that was coming. At night, enormous machines flew in the air and dropped strange things on the city. Great bangs shook the ground, and flashes of orange light burned across the sky. I couldn't see the other animals through the smoke. I didn't understand what was happening or where the loud noises were coming from. The huge blast hurt my ears. I was alone. My keeper knew how scared I was of the big explosions, so she started sneaking into the zoo after dark to keep me company and rub my ears. "We're living through a war, my girl. I hope it will be over soon. But until it is, I won't leave you alone again, I promise. I have a plan." The next day, once the head keeper had left, we crept and we creeped. We sneaked and we snucked. I was a very stealthy young elephant. My keeper took me all the way to her enclosure. It was even nicer than mine. There were lots of plants to eat, things to dust my skin with, things to scratch itches with, a new watering hole, the toilet, and new friends to sing along with. That's the phonograph. I won't even tell you what I did in the dining room, and that's where he went to the bathroom. I was home. Every morning, we would sneak back into the zoo. Then, at night, we would do it all over again. Yes, our new secret routine was working very nicely. As time passed, I got a little bigger, but I was still safe with my keeper. If we were caught, I'd be sent back to the zoo, and I'd be alone again. Neither of us wanted that. So even though I continued to grow, my keeper and I were sure that we could keep our special secret. After all, I was still a very quiet young elephant. But our secret was out. "It's not safe for you to stay here anymore, my girl," my keeper told me sadly. "I'm going to have to take you back. You should be at the zoo where you belong." I thought, "You are my family. I belong with you." But we had no choice. I had to go back. The huge blast still hurt my ears, and now there were more of them than before. I was alone again until she came back. "I could never leave you, my girl. You are my family. My home is with you." And so we spent the rest of the war together. We didn't have to wait much longer for the awful war to end. My keeper didn't need to stay with me, and things at the zoo started to change. The screeching monkeys roaring lions, and sniffling meerkats are all still here. But my keeper found me a family that would keep me company. Years have passed, and she doesn't work here anymore. I miss her a lot, but she still finds time to visit. I hope she'll recognize me. We've both got a few more wrinkles now, don't we, my girl? And there she is. She has white hair now, and she's hugging the elephant. The true story of the elephant and her keeper. The search is on. To celebrate its 75th anniversary in 2009, Belfast Zoo wanted to solve a curious mystery. Photographs have been found in the zoo archives showing a woman with a baby elephant in her backyard in Belfast during World War II. So the zoo launched a campaign to discover the identity of this woman, the Elephant Angel. It wasn't long before the truth was uncovered. The woman's name was Denise Weston Austin. She was one of the first female keepers at Belfast Zoo. She had rescued Sheila, a baby Asian elephant, and kept her at home during the war. Belfast Zoo and World War II. World War II was one of the largest and most widespread conflicts in history. It began in 1939 and ended in 1945. Germany dropped bombs on towns and cities across the UK, including Belfast. The government was worried that a bomb would drop on Belfast Zoo and all the animals would escape, endangering lives. To protect the people of Belfast, they arranged for some of the zoo animals to be killed. But Denise, the elephant angel, was determined to protect the baby elephant Sheila. The elephant in the yard. When the zoo's head keeper left every night, Denise and Sheila would walk as far as Denise's house. Sometimes the pair would stop at the local shop for pieces of leftover stale bread. The two would then walk back to the zoo every morning before the head keeper arrived. Although residents had spotted Sheila on her walks, they didn't know for sure that Sheila was staying the night. It was a very well-kept secret until Sheila chased a dog through a neighborhood's fence. The neighbor went to the head keeper, who was shocked to discover Sheila's second home. After that, Sheila had to remain at the zoo. But Denise wasn't going to abandon her, and she visited Sheila at the zoo during air raids so that she could rub her ears to keep her calm. Denise continued to visit her for the rest of Sheila's life until her death more than 20 years after World War II ended. After all, they were family. Gaga Mistake Day. My Gaga comes over on Saturdays so my parents can do errands. She makes lots of mistakes. Gaga brings fuzzy slippers to our house. She says they keep her feet warm, so why is she wearing them on her ears? She wiggles her eyebrows when I notice. Gaga and I both wear glasses. Do you see what I see? She asked me. We switch glasses. Then neither of us sees anything. My cats are named Rainbow and Honeybutter, but Gaga calls them Moonbeam and Butterfinger instead, or Raindrop and Honeydew, or Riverbottom and Honeycrisp. Sometimes I ask Gaga if she has any chewing gum, and she tells me to look in her magic purse. Oh, there's a whole chocolate bar for me in there. Oops, she says with a wink. Isn't that gum? You can chew it. Gaga and I play Connect Four. She likes making patterns, even though that's not how you play. I like winning. We both like the noisy clatter when the discs fall. When we go to the park, sometimes Gaga makes up silly rules, like we can only walk backwards the whole way, or we can only walk on cracks in the sidewalk. Gaga says, "Lunchtime." The plate has one lollipop, two pieces of cheese, three pretzel rods, four slices of cucumbers, five carrot sticks, six olives, seven blueberries, eight chunks of watermelon, nine raisins, and 10 chocolate chips. It's a very Gaga lunch. At nap time, Gaga is supposed to tuck me in, but we fall asleep together instead. Dress-up dance is one of our best games. I show Gaga my ballet moves, but she does them all wonky. My dance is called Free Spirit, she says. At the end, we both take a deep bow. I think Gaga loves birthdays even more than I do. Today, we are celebrating my Goosey's birthday. She's 4 and a half, just like me. Gaga and I bake cupcakes with sprinkles, and Goosey doesn't mind that some of them stick to the pan. I blow out the candles for her. Gaga and I agree on important stuff, like that it's never too cold to eat ice cream, even when it's snowing, and that we'd rather have a snail for a pet than a Komodo dragon. My Gaga feeds our plants ice cubes. I like helping her because she talks to them. "Hello, my beauty," she sings to a flowering plant. "You're looking very leafy." Today, Gaga brought some Play-Doh. We pushed and pulled and punched it flat. We cut out shapes. I said they looked like cookies, and Gaga said, "Have a lick." Ick! We both laughed when I made a face. Sometimes my parents get annoyed, and they say, "Gaga, she's not supposed to eat an entire bag of marshmallows before dinner." And then I say, "These aren't marshmallows. They're goblins, and I'm making sure the house is safe." Gaga says she's sorry and promises not to do it again. At bath time, Gaga puts so many bubbles in the tub that my mom has to mop up with towels. I have absolutely the very best time. When my parents aren't looking, Gaga winks at me and says, "Mistakes are fun, aren't they?" When I'm dry and in my jammies, and it's time for tuck-in, I wink at Gaga too and say, "Let's read this book." I hand it to her upside down, and she reads it that way, the whole way, all the way to the end. I love Gaga days. Okay, I'm going to finish up the first half hour of today's program with some poems from Shel Silverstein from his book, Everything on It. Mistake. Please don't ask me what and where and how and why and when. Let's just say I took a dare and I don't think I'll do it again. And it's a picture of a guy who just ate a snake and it's coming out the other end. BL what? Dog. How could you do this to me? Eat the tomato out of my BLT. I'm mad and hungry as can be. I just might make a BLD. The Ugly Contest. The Ugly Contest is ready to begin. First come the ones with the sharp, pointy chins. Now come the ones with the big, toothless grins. Now come the fish faces shaking their fins. Now come the ones with their eyeballs sunk in. Now come the creeps from the old garbage bin. Now come the ones with the green scaly skin. Now come the scuzzies and all of their kin. Now comes you. You win. The game. I'm glad you came. Let's play a game called Crook and Police Dog Rover. I bite your eye, and now you die, and now the game is over. In my garden, a bear comes dancing every Friday, gathering honey into jars. Kangaroos leap, monkeys nibble on peanuts. Queen Ruth sips tea under vines with Javier's young zebra. I've got your nose. She yelled, I've got your nose, and squeezed her fingers round her thumb. She thought it was cute, I suppose. I thought it was silly and stupid and dumb. But then I looked into the mirror and got such a scare. She did, she did. She took my nose and left her finger there. Superstar. I'm the greatest, newest superstar, and soon you'll cheer my name. I'm smart and slick and strong and quick, an expert at the game. But before we start, one question, please. I hesitate to ask it, but where's the basket? And it's a football player holding a football. Changing the baby. We like to change the baby every time he cries. We like to change the baby. Why are you surprised? We like to change the baby. Don't ask me how or why, but we'd like to change the baby. For one, that's always dry. Sign. This means victory. This means peace. It also means two hamburgers, please. The stairway. I climb the stairway to the sun, to fill my eyes with burning gold. But oh, the sky was dank and dark, and there the air was damp and cold. And down below the earth shone bright. I sat and stared in wonder. Then I crawled back down. I don't think I will climb those stairs again. Biography. First, he was born, and then he was warned, and then he was taught how to swim, and then he was married, and then he was buried, and that's all that happened to him. Fred's Heads. Fred's Heads. That's what the sign said. Want a new head? Come see Fred. Find the head that fits you best. Leave your own with all the rest. Try on one of Sunny Smiles. Wear this one that cries a while. Here is one that whistles and winks. Here is one that frowns and thinks. How about this one that grins? When you find it's wearing thin, bring it back and trade it in. Mustache Mo. Mustache Mo of the B&O. His mustache grows 10 feet or so. It got caught in the wheels below. Now there's no mustache and no Mo Mo. Nasty Nancy's Store. Whatever you want, we're all out of. Whatever you need, we ain't got. If you ask if we have what you heard that we have, I'll tell you right now, we do not. We're sold out of what you came in for. No, we only sell that now and then. No, we don't carry those. And we're already closed. Our hours are from 12 to 12:10. And this is just a reminder, my name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now for a little over 5 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Darcy believes in love at first sight. She spent her whole life waiting for that perfect magical moment. But right now, her life is anything but perfect. After a music festival, she's stranded at a bus station until morning, the day before she leaves for college. Her phone is dead, she has no cash, and she's convinced nothing good can come of this night. But then she meets Russell. Russell, cute and nice, funny and kind. This is the moment and the guy she's been waiting for. And they have until sunrise to walk and talk and connect. Over the course of this one fateful night, filled with football field picnics, night swimming, and escape artist dogs, Darcy and Russell's lives will change forever. They'll discover things they never imagined about each other and about themselves. But can you really know someone after only a handful of hours? Is it possible to fall in love in just one day? And is it worth saying hello when you know you're destined for a goodbye? Okay, last week, after deciding to stay in a guest house, Darcy took a shower after she realized that all of her clothes were missing, with a note from Chloe that said she was washing her clothes, and she gave her some other clothes to wear. Darcy went to the main house to play fishbowl. Darcy is now in the kitchen explaining to Montana how she and Russell first met. And that's where I left off last week. "That's so cool," Montana said with a sigh as she picked up her glass. "The two of you in the middle of nowhere by happenstance meeting like that. It's like something out of a movie." I nodded as I concentrated on my pasta, keeping my face averted, just because my romantic delusion bubble had been popped tonight didn't mean I had to wreck Montana's. "I mean, it just seems really romantic." Then she looked at me and raised an eyebrow, or not. I couldn't help but laugh at her expression, so nakedly interested. "I mean," I said, turning my fork between my fingers, "I was very aware I was saying this to Russell's sister. Russell is really great, but..." "Not interested," Montana finished with a knowing nod. "I get it. Is it the hair?" "I kept telling him to cut it. I don't want him to make Wallace's mistakes." "Wait, what?" Wallace called, not looking away from the game, where a very violent battle seemed to be taking place in front of a rain-swept castle. "I have a girlfriend, I'll have you know." "Yeah, she lives in Hawaii," Montana pointed out. "Well, she's still my girlfriend." "No," I said quickly, lowering my voice so that hopefully this would just be between me and Montana. I was suddenly seeing a downfall to open-plan houses. "I mean, I liked him." "Liked? Past tense?" Montana asked as she took a sip of her wine, her eyes above the glass, not leaving mine. "Well..." I looked down at my pasta bowl and took a breath. "He told me that he had a different last name. And he didn't tell me about his dad or any of you. It wasn't until he had to call for help that I found out he'd been lying to me all night." Montana set down her wine glass and raked a hand through her dark hair. "Yikes. Yeah, that's not good." "What's not good?" Connor called. "Lying about being Wiley Sanders' kid?" Montana called to Connor. Wallace paused the game and turned around to face the kitchen. "Oh, come on," he said, shaking his head at Montana. "Don't pretend you've never done it." Montana shrugged, but I could see that her cheeks had reddened. But I do get it, Wallace continued, adjusting his glasses. It can be a lot when you first meet someone, I mean, for you guys. Even with my last name, nobody assumes I'm Wiley's son. Because racism. The game unpaused, and there was a squelching sound as Sydney's avatar swung her sword, and Wallace's avatar fell to the ground, sans head. Wallace picked up his controller again with a sigh. I'm sure Russell didn't mean to trick you or anything, Montana said. It can just be, well, a whole thing. Not that I'm condoning what he did, she said quickly. Just that I can understand the impulse, especially after what happened with Olivia. What happened with Olivia? Dee Dee asked sharply. What happened with Olivia? Katie echoed. Right, I said, my mind spinning, because Russell had never talked about an Olivia. Was this an ex? What had happened? Was this the thing CJ had mentioned to Russell? I took a breath, trying to summon the courage to ask, just as Montana reached down and scooped up Andy, the dog, resting him on her lap. He immediately started licking her chin. So, are you Russell's same age or in college already? I nodded, spearing another bite of pasta. I'm about to start my freshman year, Stanwyck College. Really? Montana grinned at me and jostled the dog joyfully. I love that school. All at once, I remembered Russell talking about his friend Montana. He knew about it. How do you know it? Well, I was dating a professor there for a while when I was getting my master's in New Haven. You can say Yale, Connor said, looking over as he rolled his eyes. Oh, shut up, Montana laughed, and then turned to me. That campus is just stunning. And it's right outside the city. And they have that great fall festival. They do? In protest of going there, I had done almost no research into Stanwyck, which was now seeming incredibly stupid. Oh, it's the best, she sighed happily as she scratched the dog under his chin. God, I loved undergrad. I'd give anything to go back. Freshman year, everyone getting to know each other, hooking up in the dorms, people thinking they're actually going to continue with a philosophy major. Which undergrad? Wallace called, and Montana made a face at him. What do you mean? I asked. Oh, my brother is referring to the fact that I bounced around a little. I transferred after my freshman year, and then I took a year off to do Habitat for Humanity. And then I studied abroad and liked it so much I stayed another year. Also known as fell in love with a girl in her program, Connor said, turning a page in his book. And then I did my last year remotely because I got a great internship. She shrugged and I nodded, feeling a little overwhelmed. Montana gave me a smile, then leaned forward like she was about to tell me a secret. Everyone expects you to do 4 years in the same place. But who wants to stick to a script? Things are much more interesting when you color outside the lines. And who's to say you need college at all? My dad never went, and he's doing okay. I nodded like I was taking this seriously. So I'll put Rockstar down as my backup plan. Sounds good. Montana laughed, and I finished up my bowl of pasta. Somehow, as obvious as it was, this had never occurred to me. It was like I'd been on this path that had only pointed in one direction, trapped into going to Stanwyck because I had no other options. But it suddenly felt like a window had just been opened, letting me see a view outside, one that had been there the whole time, but I'd never bothered to look at. Because Stanwyck didn't have to be the end of the story. If I hated it and I kept my grades up, maybe I could transfer somewhere with a scholarship. Or study abroad. Maybe I wouldn't be stuck there for 4 years after all. Or maybe you'll love it, Katie pointed out hopefully. You don't know yet. Don't just decide. All done? Montana asked, looking down at my bowl. I nodded. Oh, it was so good. Thank you so much. She smiled. I'll have to tell Priya. She'll be so happy. While you're at it, tell her that we're finally playing fishbowl, Wallace said, setting down his controller with a flourish. Is it because you lost again? Connor asked. It's not that, Wallace said, but seriously, we worked so hard to set up this game, and now we're not even going to play it? Unacceptable, Sydney shrugged. Okay, Wallace pointed to her. Sydney's in. I'll go get Priya, Montana said. She grabbed my bowl from the table and dropped it in the farmhouse sink on her way over to the doors that led to the pool. Darcy, could you do me a favor? Sure, I said immediately. Great. Could you just walk to the top of the stairs and yell fishbowl? Just to let people know the game is starting. She pointed toward the foyer where I could now see there was a hallway and a suitcase. I glanced at the large wooden clock above the stove. It was really late. Did rock stars and their families just have a different internal clock? Will I wake people up? She waved this away, already opening a door. All the adults are still up, and the kids will sleep through it. Thanks. She dashed across the lawn, and I headed toward the stairs, wondering why I had to yell. Wasn't this why we all had phones? I was halfway up the stairs, rounding the corner onto the second floor, when I nearly bumped into someone coming down. Russell. Oh, he said, stopping short and taking a step back. Sorry, I said automatically. I blinked at him, just as I'd taken a shower and changed. It seemed like Russell had done the same. The jeans and t-shirt I'd seen on him all night were gone, replaced with a pair of khaki shorts and a light blue, soft-looking button-down. His hair looked wet and freshly combed, and we were standing close enough that I could tell he smelled like cedar and something else, like the woods after rain. I thought that you left. I did, I said quickly. I didn't want him to think we'd had that awkward goodbye for nothing. I absolutely left. But when I was halfway down the driveway, I saw Andy. He'd gotten out again. And then, when I brought him back to the house, Chloe told me that there weren't any more buses to L.A. tonight and that I should stay here. So, I am. He was looking at the ground, and I wished I could see his face to try to understand how he was feeling about this. Is that okay? Of course, I said, that you could stay, remember? I told you we had the guest houses. I know, I said, then crossed my arms over my chest, and thank you. I just didn't want this to be weird. Russell looked down at what I was wearing and then back up at me. Nice pants. Oh, I said, glancing at the writing down my right leg. Yeah, Chloe kind of stole my clothes? She's washing them, I guess, so she gave me these. She does that. I came to visit one time and she'd replaced all my clothes with a new direction she wanted me to try. Consider yourself lucky you just ended up with sweatpants. What did she get you? Leather pants, he said, his voice grim, like so many, and I never wore them. Think of the cows. I could feel myself on the verge of laughter, a beat from tipping over into it. Just like that, I was remembering how easy it had been with him all night, up until the very end, how simple it had seemed for a while. So, Russell said, he looked up the staircase. Were you right? I said, remembering I'd been sent here on a mission. Montana wanted me to go upstairs and yell that Fishbowl is starting. Finally! Yeah, but I didn't want to wake people up. She said it would be okay, but no, don't worry about it. Russell crossed in front of me and bounded up the stairs in what seemed like two steps. Hey, Fishbowl is starting, he yelled, then walked back down again. I heard footsteps coming down the stairs, and a second later, there was Chloe, now in a pair of very fluffy-looking slippers. Hey, Darcy, she said as she breezed by, not stopping. The sweater looks great on you. She continued down, leaving Russell and me alone. We were standing closer than I'd realized. This landing was not particularly large to begin with, and probably not designed for people to just hang around on it. Not going up or down, just stuck between two directions. And in addition to that, I felt like I was stuck between the two versions of him. The Russell Henrion he'd pretended to be, and the Russell Sanders he actually was, who I didn't really know at all. I took a breath to say something. I wasn't sure what yet, when he took a step away from me and gestured to the stairs going down. After you, he said, his tone polite. Thanks. We walked down the stairs, me leading the way, not speaking, but with our feet falling at the same time. Fishbowl! Wallace stood in front of the couches, looking happier than I'd seen him in my brief experience. Are you ready to play the best game of all time? It's good you're not building it up, Priya said, giving him a thumbs up. Nice expectation setting. We were all on the couches to play this game that had still not adequately been explained to me, beyond putting celebrities' names in a bowl. Wiley, Kenya, and Paula had passed, so it was just me, Russell, Chloe, Doug, Montana, Priya, Wallace, Connor, and Sydney who were playing. Wallace shook a giant ceramic bowl that had Sanders Family Movie Night stenciled on the side and looked at us expectantly. Are we ready? Guys, I looked over to see Wiley standing in the hallway. He was wearing blue striped pajama pants and a sweatshirt that read Harvard Westlake. But before I could even process that I was seeing Wiley Sanders in his pajamas, I noticed the expression on his face. What's up? Wallace asked, lowering the bowl. Wiley looked around the room, then back at us. His brows drawn together. Has anyone seen Andy? Chapter 13, Monday, 12:15 a.m. Okay, Wiley said, looking around at all of us. Everyone have flashlights? We were all standing by the gate at the end of the driveway. We'd been driven there in golf carts. Since time was of the essence here, and nobody had 20 minutes to hike down it. When Wiley hadn't been able to find Andy anywhere in the house, he'd come to ask us about it, which was when Montana realized that she'd accidentally left the door ajar when she went to get Priya for Fishbowl. Everyone had fanned out across the yard, and when Connor saw a gap in the hedge on the border of the Sanders house, he realized that Andy was probably running around somewhere in the neighborhood. This was when all the searching had taken on a new, more serious level, as Kendrick handed out flashlights and Wiley assigned people roles. We would all take a different area of the neighborhood and search by foot in teams of two. Kendrick and Bella would search by golf cart faster, but not so fast you couldn't spot a small dog. We needed to try and find Andy as soon as possible before he wandered too far to be able to find his way home again. and before he could possibly run into a coyote. So we gathered up the search party. Chloe and Paula stayed behind so they could watch the sleeping kids, and also so there would be someone there in case Andy found his way back. "We've got them," Connor said, holding up his flashlight. The happy, joking group from the couch was gone. Everyone standing around the base of the driveway was serious, their faces grave and worried. "Great," Wiley said, nodding. "Let's check in with each other in 30 minutes. If we haven't found him by then, hopefully he hasn't gotten far." Kendrick pointed a clicker at the huge black WS gate, and they started to swing slowly outward. We all walked through, and as we did, it hit me that this was the first time I was going through them. I'd flown here, as crazy as that still seemed to me. So since I hadn't seen this road, or the rest of the neighborhood, except from the sky, I didn't know what I'd be walking out into. But it was just a dark street. There wasn't a line painted down it, or many streetlights that I could see. There didn't even seem to be a house across from Wiley's, just a wall of hedges. The second we'd made it out to the street, people started to organize themselves into pairs, mostly the couples, Montana and Priya, Kenya and Doug, Sydney and Connor. It wasn't until I saw Wiley clap Wallace on the shoulder that I realized it left me and Russell to pair up. I knew this wasn't a crazy assumption for everyone to have made, that Russell and I would want to be paired up. After all, I'd arrived with him, had been introduced as his friend. He was the only reason that I was even there. And frankly, everyone was probably too worried about the missing dog to give this much thought at all. Russell seemed to realize this at the same moment that I did, turning his head as everyone else dispersed, flashlight beams bright against the blue-black night. The golf carts pulled out of the driveway, each turning a different direction, and a second later, they were gone. "You can go back to the house," Russell said, nodding at the gates. They were starting to close, with the W and the S coming closer together. But slowly, taking their time, "I can go on my own." "No, I want to help." And I did, even if that meant having to walk around with Russell. "Okay," Russell said. The flashlight beams of his family were fading as they started to cover more ground, getting further away from us. If you squinted, it was almost like we were back in Jesse, when it felt like we were the only two people on Earth, when it felt like we had all the time in the world. "Which way?" Russell pointed, and we started walking. "Well, this is a gated neighborhood, so hopefully he's just on the street or in someone's yard and hasn't made it onto the main roads." I nodded, pressing my lips together as I swung my flashlight beams over the hedges. I was determined not to speak first. Sometimes we'd hear faint calls of, "Andy!" But aside from that, it was just Russell and me, walking along without speaking. But after a few minutes of silent walking and no dog in sight, my curiosity got the better of me. "So, are these other houses like your dad's?" "I guess," Russell said, glancing over at me. "Why?" "Well, I was just wondering why we hadn't, seen any." There would occasionally be a house I could see set way back from the road, but mostly it was just fences or high hedges or gates. "Oh, yeah, they're all pretty big, and people around here really like their privacy." I turned my flashlight to the left side of the road, and Russell took the right. "Andy! Andy!" Russell called. We both stopped listening. I was straining my ears for the sound of a small terrier barreling toward us. But when nothing came, we started moving again. Well, he does a lot of this, Russell said, after we'd been walking in silence for a while. Runs away? Yeah. My dad rescued him a few months ago, and Andy's been trying to escape ever since. He's brought trainers in, specialists, dog behavioralists. Nobody can seem to get him to stop. Tidbit never goes anywhere, so my dad wasn't prepared for this. I nodded. It was almost impossible to imagine Tidbit running away, or running, period. And usually he doesn't do this more than once a day, but I guess he saw his chance. Has he ever come back on his own? When he's run away before? No, we've always found him, and he always seems really happy to see us, and thrilled to be back home again. It's almost like he wants his freedom, but then gets turned around and can't find his way back. Well, it seems like he's got a pretty good setup at your dad's. You wouldn't think he'd want to run away from all that. I guess if someone wants to leave, you can't convince them otherwise, even if they're running away from something pretty great. Anyway, after 3 escape attempts, my dad changed the dog's name. To Andy? Russell nodded. I don't get it. Well, his full name is Andy Dog Freest. It took me a moment, but then it clicked into place. From the Shawshank Redemption? I asked, and he nodded again. Yeah, my dad would love that. It's his favorite movie. My dad's too. Really? I think it's every dad's favorite movie. I know, he is just a dad, Russell said quietly after a few moments, like he understood what I'd been thinking. I mean, despite he made a vague gesture like it could encompass all of it. The modern art, the Grammys, the helicopter, the mansion, he sighed. I know it can be a lot. And unfortunately, this is where we're going to have to stop today because we are out of time. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. I want to say hi to all the listeners out there, and I want to encourage everyone to tune in next week when I continue with the novel, The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.